scriptures this morning. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 5, Text 22 to 26. This chapter is called The Frustration of the Sacrifice of Daksha.
Tivavaitashtirastasmin Dakshinagnavamashita Tattevayajanam Dhagva Padhistakuyakalayam.
Juhava, sacrificed as an oblation. Etat, that, shiraha, head, tasmin, in that, dakshina agnav, in the sacrificial fire, on the southern side, amashitaha, virabhadra, being greatly angry, tat, of Daksha, Devya Janam, the arrangements for the sacrifice to the demigods, Dagdha, having set fire, Patishthat, departed, Guyaka Alayam, to the abode of the Guyakas. Kailash. Translation, Virabhadra then took the head and with great anger threw it into the southern side of the sacrificial fire, offering it as an oblation. In this way the followers of Lord Shiva devastated all the arrangements for sacrifice. After setting fire to the whole arena, they departed for their master's abode in Kailash. There's no purport here, there's a purport on 24. So we read from translations from 22. Then Virabhadra, the giant-like personality, sat on the chest of Daksha and tried to separate his head from his body with sharp weapons, but was unsuccessful. He tried to cut the head of Daksha with hymns as well as weapons. But still, it was hard to cut even the surface of the skin of Daksha's head. Thus, Virabhadra was exceedingly bewildered. Then Virabhadra saw the wooden device in the sacrificial arena by which animals were to have been killed. He took the opportunity of this facility to behead Daksha. Purport by Dvangai Sisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this connection, it is to be noted that the device used for killing animals in the sacrifice was not designed to facilitate eating their flesh. The killing was specifically intended to give new life to the sacrificed animal by the power of Vedic mantra. The animals were sacrificed to test the strength of the Vedic mantras. Yajnas were performed as a test of the mantra. Even in the modern age, tests are executed on animal bodies in the physiology laboratory. Similarly, whether or not the Brahmanas were uttering the Vedic hymns correctly was tested by the sacrifice in the arena. On the whole, the animals thus sacrificed were not at all the losers. Some old animal would be sacrificed, but in exchange for their old bodies, they received other new bodies. That was a test of the Vedic mantras. Virabhadra, instead of sacrificing animals with the wooden device, immediately beheaded Daksha to the astonishment of everyone. And the purport. Text 25. Upon seeing the actions of Virabhadra, the party of Lord Shiva were pleased and cried out joyfully. All the Buddhist ghosts and demons that had come had made a tumultuous sound. On the other hand, the Brahmanas in charge of the sacrifice cried out in grief at the death of Daksha. 26. Virabhadra then took the head and with great anger threw it into the southern side of the sacrificial fire, offering it as an oblation. In this way, the followers of Lord Shiva devastated all the arrangements for sacrifice. After setting fire to the whole arena, they departed for their master's abode, Kailash. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purpose of the 4th canto, 5th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Frustration of the Sacrifice of Daksha. Om Agyanantaranda Shuchagyan Chalakaya Chakshulamitam Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Maum Shnubhraya Krishna Pristaya Bhutare Simati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Shandavari Vasyate Satarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Translations. Then Virabhadra, the giant-like personality, sat on the chest of Daksha and tried to separate his head from his body with sharp weapons, but was unsuccessful. He tried to cut the head of a Daksha with hymns as well as weapons, but still it was hard to cut even the surface of the skin of Daksha's head. Thus Virabhadra was exceedingly bewildered. Then Virabhadra saw the wooden device in the sacrificial arena by which the animals were to have been killed. He took the opportunity of this facility to behead Daksha. Upon seeing the actions of Virabhadra, the party of Lord Shiva was pleased and cried out joyfully. All the Buddhas, ghosts and demons that had come made a tumultuous sound. On the other hand, the Brahmanas in charge of the sacrifice cried out in grief at the death of Daksha. Virabhadra then took the head and with great anger threw it into the southern side of the sacrificial fire, offering it as an oblation. In this way, the followers of Lord Shiva devastated all the arrangements for sacrifice. After setting fire to the whole arena, they departed for their master's abode in Kailash.
Hare Krishna.
Big mess. Still another chapter to come. Two chapters on this subject. So in the Prabhupada is purports about the sacrificing animals. As it's a controversial topic. So here, as well as many other places, Srila Prabhupada mentions that this animal sacrifice doesn't condone flesh eating. It was to test the power of the Vedic mantras, the chanters of the mantras, and the body was rejuvenated. They would kill the animal with some kind of guillotine or whatever it was, and then they would bring them back to life with a rejuvenated body. Sometimes it's mentioned they would lead an old animal into the fire and he would come through the fire and then out the other side with a younger body. That was to test the power of the mantras. So there's obviously great power in the sound vibration. If one knows the proper syllables and one has the proper adhikar to chant these sounds, then one can do wonderful things. Right? The creation begins from sound. Om. Ether, nothing, space, then sound comes. Then the creation begins. So that was the real actual meaning. In Calcutta they have a slaughterhouse, Kaligat, and they have a relief of Kali, goddess Kali, and she's a relief is there on the wall. So everything they cut becomes prasadam. That's a theory. So you go there and get Kali prasadam, but. There are injunctions for eating animal flesh in the scriptures, but it's not like this is not the way to do it. One has to kill the animal oneself, and on specific times, and chant the mantra, Mamsha, I am taking your life. I know that in my next life you'll come back and take my life. Then the foolish person will kill the animal and enjoy the taste. Good taste. Meat is good taste. The Prabhupada said it must be, otherwise why is everyone eating it? So some scriptures are denying, some scriptures are allowing. We heard yesterday, Praviti Mag, Niviti Mag. It's the same thing that Chandkazi said to the Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu asked the same question, why are you killing the cow? He said, because, he said in the Quran is also the Praviti and Niviti. That in the Niviti part, he said, it's actually forbidden. So it's like in your scriptures, you also have some parts in the Praviti, these sense gratification is permitted. But in the Niviti, then it's forbidden. So very bewildering. To your world is very bewildering. And we heard the other day, Vidvangaranga Prabhu made the point that in different communities, you may have one community, but there may be same people in the same community. Some are following Niviti, some are following Praviti. So, different laws, different rules apply to different persons, different mentalities. Everyone is different. Material world is confusing, actually, quite confusing, unless you understand, unless you've heard from the top what the actual import of these injunctions are. Srila Prabhupada says there's some people are going to eat meat at any cost, so therefore there's an allowance. At least they'll do it. They'll do it the way that is recommended. God recommends it. So then they can be, they won't go to hell. They'll have to take birth again, you see. At least, but they won't go to hell. Because they're following a religious, they're doing it religiously. So at least it'll keep them civilized. Because the material world is for sinful people. Otherwise, why are we here? And there's different grades of sinful people. Like in the prison house, there's different grades of prisoners. You have an open prison, but there's actually no walls for the lesser type. Right up to the high security prison and the solitary confinement, where one is just locked up in by himself. So they're different according to the severity of the case, and they have, so like that, according to the severity of our criminality, or the according to our effects of the modes of nature, then we will act like that. So everything in the material world is going on under the modes of nature. Krishna says nothing else is moving here, it's only the modes of nature that is actually doing everything. Premanjana gave a nice class about the modes of nature the other day, how they're all, according to the Krishna and Bhagavad Gita, the modes are all struggling for supremacy. So sometimes one becomes prominent, sometimes another becomes prominent. So that's how it is in the material world. You just have to, there's not much you can do about it, really. You just have to go along with it, right? When something comes up, an issue comes up, then everyone gets into it, and everyone's, you know, rah, 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 and then after a while it goes, and something else comes up, and so the whole idea is to be transcendental, to be indifferent to the modes of nature. You still got to go along with it, just like you're in a boat, a small boat on the ocean. You're completely at the mercy of the ocean. Prabhupada said when he was on a Jaladuta, it was a ship, quite a big ship, but he said, you know, relatively speaking, it was like a matchstick. When you go back and look at the ship on the ocean, it becomes, when you're in your airplane and you're flying over the ocean, you see two little white lines where the boat is going and it's breaking the water. You can see the foam, but you can only see one dot. You can hardly see the boat, but you know the farther you get up. So, and the ocean's huge. Big wave will come. It's nothing to a tiny little boat. So you're So you're completely at the mercy, although you have the engine, the captain, the navigator, the compass, everything is there. You have all the equipment to reach your destination. Still, if a big wave comes or a big wind comes, just depends on a degree of how much wind and how big the wave, then your little motor is useless. So you're always dependent on, you have to go with it. There's nothing you can do about it. So Krishna's premise is you become indifferent to it rather than trying to overcome it or try to enjoy the situation when it's pleasing, when there's no storm, when it's calm, trying to rather than to do those things is the practice of Krishna consciousness, which is not of this world. It's purely spiritual. Krishna's name, form, paraphernalia, his pastimes, activities, and all that is connected with him, his service, that's different from the material world. Akama. There's nothing to do with the material world. So business, that should be our only business. That is what we're learning in the science of sadhana bhakti, how to engage our senses 24 hours a day in Krishna consciousness, especially with those nine most potent processes. And over and above that, the consciousness should also be involved. While we're actually performing, engaged in those activities, the consciousness should be there. We're doing this as an offering to Krishna. And then that's the platform of liberation. But even though you're going to be sloshed around by the waves of the modes of nature, when everything happens in the world, you have to go along with it. You have to. It's not that you're transcendental and nothing affects the situation. The Goswamis are transcendental. They had to watch the temples being pulled down by the Mughals, and they were out there. They just had to go along with it. They had to hide the deities and move them and things like that. There's nothing they can do about it. So, as far as the materialistic conception of life is concerned, which we're also identifying with, we're using this material identity, the identity of this body and the senses. We have to use it as an instrument. It's all we have to work with. But it's also working under the modes of nature. So then you just have to go with the tide. Nothing much you can do about it. So this is transcendental knowledge. But most people are not interested in this. They're interested in one of the other types of knowledge, pravritti or nivritti. How to enjoy and how to become free. They're both illusory in the aspect that the soul is actually never bound, so it actually can never become liberated. Soul doesn't touch matter, but because our consciousness has projected into matter, we separated ourselves in our consciousness, we're projecting it on matter, and so we're thinking we're part of this material world, therefore we're enjoying the material world, or when there's suffering we want to become free from it. So, but from the absolute platform, this is not actually affecting the soul proper. But when you're in this dimension, this bodily dimension, then it's real, for all intents and purposes. So if one has to wake up to one's actual identity, and you do this not by negating the material world. That's a very troublesome and long process, the process of Gyan and Yoga, or by satiating the senses and realizing there's no satisfaction. But then again, that's a lower platform. Then again, then you come to the other Nivritti Marg, you come to the platform of Gyan, Yoga, then you actually want to renounce it. This is a normal way to think, because we think we're the living entity in the material world, thinks he's the doer. He's the controller of activities. So therefore, you if we're the doer, then we will control. We would control our situation and become free from the material world. It's like now we're in the same consciousness. We're coming out of the material world and into the, by good fortune or some other reason, but mainly good fortune. Ultimately, at the beginning it was good fortune, and then by endeavor we're trying to become actually free from the Maya, free from the cycle of birth and death. But our process is not to fight Maya, our process is to engage in the activities of Krishna consciousness. So that's our process. That's difficult enough because we're so attracted to Maya that we can't give up the idea that we're the controllers. And it's very difficult to stop defending, to not defend yourself. It's very difficult to do that. To just depend on Krishna, which is the ultimate shelter, the ultimate goal, is to become completely dependent on Krishna in every circumstance. So that's your actual, that's your transcendent, that's the transcendental situation. That's what we want to do. And all these other things that go on in the material world, they're all practically irrelevant. It's just trouble, just troublesome. This is Satyuga, the best time. The best time. And they're having big problems. But it's all the activities are actually superficial. The good activities, the bad activities, all superficial also. Really, when you look at it from the viewpoint of this, a spiritual viewpoint, the material world is degrading all the time. It's physics. Right? Physics of it is, it's degrading all the time. From Satyuga to Kali Yuga, it's always degrading. Sometimes there's a little, goes up a little bit, but generally it's going down like that. Sometimes it's like, oh, and when it's up, the religious or the opulence increases and everything is good. The empire has come up, the dharma is dharma is flourishing, then it's better, a little better. The best time was in Chitragupta king under Janaka Pandit. That time was the best time for the dharma in India. The best time, very opulent, very nice time. Didn't last very long, but because they was actually following Dharma then. So generally it's on the downward, everything is going down from Satya to Kali. But sometimes it's a little, go up a little bit. And that's, but not for long. You can't maintain that because we're subject to time, and time is working, it's Krishna's energy, it's working under his thing. And it's a program is there. But then when Kali finishes again, Satya Yuga. So what is the use of all the activities which are concerned in this material world? So you can chant mantra, you can chant the mantra and rejuvenate an old animal and give it a new body. They're powerful. But what does it mean? Really? What value is that? I don't know. I can chant a mantra and give the animal new life. So what? It's a trick. I mean, you're clever, you're intelligent, you have the ability to do it, but so what? You can't keep the animal young forever. As soon as he's got a young body, he starts to get old again. So what is the value of all of these things anyway? So the piety, the religion, is just to keep people from sinking way down into oblivion, just to keep us some connection with God, so that, and in that association, they're likely to bump into those souls that are not conditioned, not part of this material world. Those nitya-siddhas that come here and move about like ordinary people, and then sometimes you get their association, or they directly or indirectly, and that is the saving grace. Then you can come out of it altogether. So that's the real purpose of the piety or religion. Otherwise, by itself, there's no instinctive value in it. Everyone gets old, sick, and dies, and leave it all behind. And the pious, they take birth in the higher regions, and the impious, they take birth in the lower regions. But everyone, no one can stay in any one place. You've got to keep moving. Everyone is subject to time. So what is the real value of it all? And there's always danger, you know, even if you're really pious. There's always danger in your next birth. You may take a good birth, but it doesn't guarantee that you're going to be, you know. You can always meet with the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion, and again you can be influenced by that. So these modes are always the swelling of the ocean, the waves comes up and down, and it's like that, the modes of nature are moving. Not much you can do about it. You just have to ride with it and tolerate it. But don't become overly affected by it. Don't become too fearful, because you expect it. Krishna says the material world is a place of suffering. So you can expect suffering. Krishna says that from the onset. And then when there's a relief, then we shouldn't go overboard. Oh, it's so nice, and forget the purpose. Oh, this is actually what we want, some relief, some pleasure. Then you forget. But it doesn't, that soon that, by the influence of time, which bought that pleasure actually, according to your karma, then again it takes it away. So then you're left again on the precarious situation. So sukha dukkha, that's the material world. It's just happiness and distress. One follows the other. And we're wasting all our energy trying to offset the distress and achieve the happiness. This way the human life is spoiled. The animals, they don't have any other choice but just to go along with it, trying to avoid the problems and trying to seek pleasure. There's a difference between the human and animal. The animals can't ask these questions. Animals can't make a solution to these problems of life. Their intelligence is not developed. They don't ask these kind of questions. They don't have a satsanga. So they stay within the samsara, and they gradually evolve by evolution. Then they come to a human being again when they worked off the results of their sinful activities, these lower bodies. Again, they get a chance as a human being, where you can actually, by good fortune, you can come back into the understand the reality of what is going on, endeavor to go in that direction, and then you can become actually free from the samsara altogether. So this is the transcendental knowledge that we are given, and we're given a transcendental process. We're given a spiritual activity, absolute activity. Krishna's absolute, his name, fame, paraphernalia, pastimes, service, all absolute. They're all absolute, just different varieties of the same absolute nature, the chit potency. Whether you're chanting or taking prasada, serving or hearing or remembering, it's the same absolute truth, just in diversity, in different ways it's manifesting. He's manifesting in those ways. So we can, of course it's for his pleasure, his rasa, that's why it's diverse. So then if we can catch hold of that and cling hold of that, then that is our safety. That is our lifeboat in the ocean. We're in the lifeboat. So although it's still rocky here, we shouldn't let that rocking, the happiness and distress, interfere with our conscious service to Krishna. That's all. The rocking is going to go on. The body is going to go to, the happiness and distress are going to come and go. We can't avoid that. But we shouldn't get too overboard and lose sight of the actual purpose. And so these stories are there to inform us of the best way to act in this world, the best things to do. We also chant mantra, right? We test the efficiency of our mantra. We chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. What was the three things? The tongue, the hand, the finger, and the ear. He said, this is the area of the mantra, and this is the area of the mind. You shouldn't go beyond this, beyond this space here. Then you can be peaceful. So this is actually mind control. But keeping that mind focused on the mantra. So the only thing you're conscious of is chanting it and turning your beads, if you're chanting on beads. So then the mind is controlled into a very limited area. Otherwise it's going all over the universe, right? So that's the idea, is not to control the mind, but without the controlled mind, without the controlled senses, then Krishna's not going to reveal himself. It's not going to be possible to attain transcendence if one has to do that. But the idea, we shouldn't be using the mantra to control our minds, although often we do that. We're using the devotional process as a means to control our senses, but that's not the actual purport. That's not the real thing. Automatically these senses are controlled by engaging in devotional service. If our consciousness is properly situated in devotion, we're performing devotional service to Krishna. This is our constitution position. This is the refuge of the mature world. This is actual sanctuary. This is actual safety. This is actually peace. This you have to be fixed up with this knowledge. We have to be, philosophically anyway, we have to be convinced of this. We chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Then if you're really just absorbed in that, then you're switching the material world off. Just hearing Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. At least for the duration of your specific. That's why you should have a specific time to chant japa. It should be a japa period. When you're walking around and Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare, your big bag in one hand and so many other things going on, then it's not the same. But that's why it's considered essential and to have a japa period. When nothing else is going on, then all those other things, or important things that are coming in, no, you can immediately pat them off. Not now. You have a time for those things, all your management problems and things, and great ideas and realize. No. Now is time for this chanting Hare Krishna. So then we take shelter, and we do that with all of the aspects of service, but specifically we hear about this in chanting Hare Krishna, and the proof of the way we can test out chanting, like they test here, we don't use an animal, but it's also mentioned in the eyes don't flow with tears and hair standing on end. When you chant the holy name of Krishna, heart is going to be steel framed. Okay? So Prabhupada mentioned in the purport that shloka. He said that is a test. If tears don't come to your eyes when you chant and your hairs don't stand on end, then it's considered your heart is steel framed. So this is our test, the potency of our mantra chanting. When we chant, our hairs should stand on end and tears should come to the eyes. That's our test. So we're same system, similar system. They're testing it like this, and we're testing like this. What are our symptoms? These are symptoms of bhava, shedding of tears, repulations, etc. They're symptoms of bhava. So where is that? Krishna's directly in his, there in the name. It's not different from Krishna. So he's right here. He's in our ears. He's in our mind. Why aren't we actually experiencing him? We're hearing, but why aren't we experiencing? It's directly Krishna. We should be convinced of that. So obviously we don't have the adhikar. Krishna reveals himself as you, according to your mentality, according to your degree of surrender to him, then he reveals himself. So it means that we're not actually ready, when actually surrendered to Krishna. If we're not surrendered to Krishna, we've got to be surrendered to something. That means we surrender to our own ideas, our own happiness, ideas of happiness and our own ideas of safety or protection. They're still playing a very important role in our lives. Otherwise, if they weren't there, this is only those two things. There's only happiness and defense. Control and defending, karma and jnana. There's only those two things that are separating us from Krishna. Because in this world, there's only those two things that are going on. Either you're trying to defend, get a move out of an uncomfortable situation, improve your situation, or you're trying to enjoy that facility on sleeping. That's all that's going on. Or in your conscious waking state, there's only those two things. So those two things are coming between us and our relationship with Krishna. So we think that enjoying, my enjoyment is very important to me, or my safety is very important to me. It's more important than Krishna's service. Because if it wasn't there, then you would get these symptoms. That means your heart is still covering on the heart. You still have that idea that we're the doers, we're the controllers and we're the enjoyers. That hasn't gone away, that false ego is there. And that is a steel coat around the heart. So there's a simple test for us. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama, as sincerely as possible. And if it's not happening, yeah, we got more to go. We got some more work to do. We don't have the adhikar. Krishna's not revealing himself to us fully. We're not feeling his presence. He doesn't want to. We're not quite. He wants to. He's there, but we can't approach him. We have to be the same atmosphere as him to approach in his dimension. He's not gonna. He doesn't touch the material world. So as much as the material world that we're clinging to that degree we can't approach Krishna. That is a distance between us and Krishna. So one should be, first of all, philosophically convinced that this is actually complete shelter, complete peace, complete safety in Krishna consciousness, and complete happiness. All the things that we're looking for, and those two things that we're looking for in the material world, it's there in Krishna. But it's there, it's complete. In the material world, it's temporary. They're happy for a while. the Brahmins are happy when Bhrigu brings out the demigods and chases all the Buddhas away. Their fear is gone, they're happy. Then again, they retaliate with more. Then the Buddhas are happy and the Brahmins are sad. In the end, it's a happy ending. They get pacified, but what an endeavor just to get some transcendental knowledge of the value of association of devotees, the importance of those devotees who are not of this world. Everything else is superficial. Why would Krishna or Lord Brahma arrange all this? They know this is going to happen. They don't come to this sacrifice. They knew it was going to happen. Why did they let it go on? Because we're so dull, we need a very extreme lesson to learn. So they did very extreme ways. And that's life. That's life. There are all these problems coming and going, happiness and distress. We're running into these things. But they shouldn't. We should gradually, by this transcendental knowledge, become a little indifferent to it. Prabhupada said, advanced, you become oblivious, you become, sorry, indifferent to the body, the bodily demands. I like this, I don't like that. You should become indifferent to that. Because that's what's taking up all your time. I mean, it's taking so much time. I like this, I don't like that. How to get this, how to get away from that. Most of our time is spent like that. So you should become indifferent to that. Is tolerate as much as possible. Just tolerate these things. Come and go. Anyway, we can't resolve the problem. Right? We've all tried really our hardest to overcome problems. Problems will still come. Tomorrow more problems will come. Right? We're not any better off. The problems and that comes and the happiness comes. We haven't resolved anything through in our own experience in this one lifetime. We haven't resolved.